Welcome to The View magazine's Rebel Justice podcast. We want to change the way you see justice. So we bring you the stories and lived experiences of women who have gone through the justice system, whether as victims of abuse, violence, exploitation, or state neglect, or women in conflict with the law. You'll remember a few weeks ago, we brought you an important podcast with Camilla, Sianda's mother, and the force behind the Free Sianda campaign. Camilla believes her 22-year-old daughter, who was vulnerable and disabled, was let down and has suffered a miscarriage of justice. In today's episode, one of the founders of The View, Farah Damji, speaks with Sianda, who was released from prison recently, about her experiences inside, what she learned, and what kept her going. Keep listening to find out what gives this courageous woman the fight to keep going so she can clear her name.
How long is it since you've been released, Sianda?
About 2 weeks.
So not so long?
No, not too long. But it feels like ages already.
It's so strange how time just plays tricks with you when you're inside, doesn't it? Time goes so slowly and you get out and it's suddenly like the world is just so incredibly fast. You look so healthy.
I was literally the exact opposite.
No, listen, you look so well. Your colour is so good. Your complexion is so good. You should have seen me when I came out. Oh, my God.
So how long are you in for?
The last time they recalled me for 15 and a half months on an unlawful recall, Sianda, and my parole board hearing got put off. And then we started The View in Downview Prison. And the governor asked me to start a magazine. So I used to be a journalist. I was like, yeah, great, I'll start a magazine. And then I got into so much trouble. They shipped me out to North Yorkshire. And then, of course, I thought my parole board hearing was going to get postponed again. But finally, 15 and a half months later, when the parole board finally saw me, they did an immediate release. There was like, there is no reason this woman needs to be in custody. But it was horrible. I was in such a state when I got out. Oh, my God, it was awful. So, Sianda, I'm really honored to welcome you on our Rebel Justice podcast. We've tried to do as much as we can to support your cause. We wrote about your case in one of our earlier issues. So it's an absolute pleasure to speak to you now that you've been released, as you just told me, for just a couple of weeks. How did it feel to be incarcerated when you knew that you'd done nothing wrong?
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one, really. So obviously, like all of the like emotions that you can imagine, like angry, upset, like devastated. I just didn't know like what the rest of my life was going to entail. But it was absolutely soul destroying, really, especially because at the time when I went to prison, not a lot of people actually knew like what happened, my story and stuff. It was only a couple of weeks before that I sort of made it public what I was going through. So obviously, of course, I didn't have like all of the support of like the campaign. I didn't have all of that behind me. So I was just, really unsure of like what was going to happen. And even though it was, so I got 4.5 years, obviously do half of that in custody, 2 years, 3 months. In the grand scheme of things, it's not that long of time. But on that first day, or like when you walk down those stairs, you literally like, you feel like it's going to go on forever. So yeah, it was really soul destroying, but there was always like this little part like of me that felt like it wasn't the end. Like there was something more coming, but I didn't know what it was, and obviously now I still don't know what it is. It just didn't feel final, if that makes sense. I just knew that this journey was going to keep on going, but I just obviously didn't know, and didn't know what was going to come of it. And even now, coming through it, sort of like I'd say I'm in the middle of it, I still don't know what's going to come out of it at the end. But I'm just trying to keep positive, really.
You say that 2 years and 3 months is not a long time, but how old were you when you first went to prison?
I was 21. So
that is quite a chunk of time, you know, at that age, or at any age, really.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, I think any length of time in prison is too long, really. And the reason I look at it like that is because at the time I felt like it was the end of the world, but like since being in prison and meeting all different people and seeing different people's circumstances and stuff, I realized that actually even though my, you know, my circumstances are not great and it's quite horrible what happened to me, there's actually so many people in prison in, I'd say, worse circumstances than me, but they don't have like the, they're not fortunate to have like the loving family that I have or the friends that I have or like the support that I have. So yeah, that's why I sort of look at it like, you know, it is only 2 years, 3 months, because actually I know that I have the rest of my life now, but then there's other people that don't know that or don't get that. So does that make sense?
Absolutely. That's such a powerful message that whatever they do to us, you know, we always all still have a future.
Yeah.
Do you trust the justice system now, Sianda, after what's happened to you?
No.
No.
Sorry. I don't mean to laugh.
That's a brilliant response.
Yeah, no, definitely not. And even more so, have absolutely zero trust in them since being in prison. And like I said, like talking to people and hearing people's stories, like, yeah, I don't know what this system is, but it's not a justice system. It's a joke. That's it. Because yeah, there's just so many miscarriages of justice. Like, yeah.
Tell us about a typical day in prison. Did you get any rehabilitation and did you have to do any offending behavior programs?
So the days, well, there was like, I sort of look at my sentence in blocks because of course I went in on the 13th of March, 10 days later it was lockdown. So literally like in those first like 4 months, 5 months, literally a normal day was just, well, it was 23-hour banger. So literally in the cell for 23 hours, just waiting for them to open the door to, so you could get lunch and dinner. And then, yeah, just sort of shouting at your door, asking for a shower and then being told no most days. Yeah, just lying in bed, watching rubbish on telly. Yeah, that's really what the first like few months looked like. After that, it wasn't much better, but I just was able to cope with it better. Reading, writing. I ended up getting, I got a DVD player, so started watching box sets. It, like, there really was no, like, much routine or structure to most of my sentence until I, like, changed prison in November 21. And then I started to get a lot more structure to my day and routine, but there was no like rehabilitation going on, nothing at all. I did one course, and to be honest, I did the course not because I had to, because I literally was so bored. I just needed to get out of my cell and do something. And it was a like anger and violence course, which lasted for like 5 weeks. So yeah, that's the only course I did, and then obviously it did link to the conviction that they gave me, so that was a bonus. But to be honest, like, I used to ask, because you get like your offender manager, I used to ask them like, is there anything that you're going to put on my like sentence plan or whatever, just because I was literally so bored. And they always used to say to me like, you don't need help from us, like you don't need anything from us, like you just need to do the sentence and that's it, like you don't actually need anything. So I'd be like, so can I go then? Because like, you're telling me that I'm this dangerous criminal, like you have to go to prison to be rehabilitated and all of this. But then in the next breath, you're saying like, there's nothing we need to do for you. They're saying you don't have anger issues. You don't have this. You don't have that. You know, you're not a violent person. You're not this. So, okay, so why am I in prison? So, yeah.
That's just so alarming that they can keep a young woman inside for 2 years and 3 months and offer no rehabilitation at all. So literally, it was to cage you. There was no rehabilitation. There was no sentence plan. It was just to cage you. So what would you say to the judge that sentenced you? He sentenced you because you're a dangerous criminal, Sianda, and a threat to the public and a risk to the public. And, you know, all this other nonsense that these judges say in their sentencing speeches, which are just so alarming and abusive and horrific. Judges need much better training in their language and the abuse that they heap on women in particular, because it is disgusting. What would you say to your sentencing judge now?
You know, for me, it's quite difficult because the judge that sentenced me, when he sentenced me, I know for a fact that he knew that I wasn't guilty. And it was quite clear that he knew, but he was sort of skirting around it, trying to say like so many positive things. But then obviously, for some reason, they're bound, they have to say something negative. I don't get it. So it's difficult for me because I know that in his own way, which is just quite messed up, but in his own way, like, I think he was trying to make the situation a tiny bit better and taking like everything into consideration. But to be honest, taking that out of, like, taking my own opinion about like his feelings and stuff out of the equation, to be honest, I just have nothing to say, like literally nothing to say, because there's nothing positive to say, there's nothing negative to say. Like, those people really just don't deserve my energy like to even have anything to say.
What kind of support did you get in prison to help you with your trauma and your disabilities?
So when it comes to my disabilities, nothing. Yeah, nothing. So anything that I had to give me like any comfort in terms of easing of any pain or anything literally came from, my mum had to send it in. So like my mum had to send me in a TENS machine. She sent me in knee braces, all stuff like that. But yeah, like every time I asked for help, it was always like, we can't give it to you, or we don't do that, or whatever. Like, I fell down the stairs on one of the wings and literally like I couldn't walk, like I couldn't even walk. And I had my stick, but I needed crutches, and they just didn't offer it. They were like, we don't do crutches, sorry. Like, what do you want us to do? Just lie in bed. Like, what do you want us to do? That went on for like 2 weeks. That was really bad. Yeah, there is no support. It's literally just help yourself. And then you just get responses like, well, you shouldn't have come to prison then, and stuff like that. Well, I didn't choose to be here. But yeah, nothing in terms of disabilities. In terms of mental health and the trauma, I got EMDR therapy through from the prison. But to be honest, that I literally had to basically hit rock bottom and then actually be worried for my welfare. I only got that because I was literally like on the floor, like rock bottom. They were worried like that they were going to have something on their hands, sort of thing. That was literally, I know that was the only reason, because they took me off all of my medication. So I was taking medication for mental health like before I went into prison. And then they got into prison, took it all off me, just like, you can't have this, sorry. And then I didn't get any medication until the June, so that's like 3 months later. And like by that point, as you can imagine, with the circumstances, plus just going into prison anyway, is, you know, it's going to be take a toll on anyone. And then with the 23-hour banger, like, yeah, I was literally on the floor. So yeah, that, you know, that helped me, but that's when I got it.
So it was literally when you were desperate and begging for help and on the floor, and when they thought they might have another death in custody on their hands, that they actually turned around and said, no, we need to help her. That's disgusting. I've got no words. What is your hope for the Free Sianda campaign?
So, I mean, obviously, my hope is that, well, obviously to free myself of the conviction. but more importantly than that, like, I want to help people who find themselves in situations that they just don't know how to get out of when it comes to the justice system. Because actually the one thing that I didn't have, I had my family, my friends, I had all of that, but there was no one that I could go to for any information, any help, any guidance about the situation that I'd currently found myself in, which I find crazy because there are so many people that have been in this situation. So, and they were like, there was no sort of, there was, I mean, like in Wales, there none of the sort of race equality organizations wanted to help, you know, and there was no one else that I knew to go to apart from one organization, which wasn't even in Wales, and they helped me as best as they could. But yeah, that is ultimately my hopes for the Free Zyanda campaign, which is, yeah, the much, much bigger, much more important goal, which is, yeah, being able to support people, black, especially like black and brown women, like being able to support them if they find themselves in this situation or any other situation where there is an injustice to do with this system. Yeah, because it's just crazy.
That's brilliant. Just give us a brief update on where the campaign is and what happened at the appeal court and why you're doing a crowd justice campaign.
At the moment, we are waiting to petition to the Supreme Court. We are gathering the information that we need. And once we have that, we'll be able to lodge that appeal again with the Supreme Court. So that's going really well. And then in terms of what happened previously at the appeal court, obviously I wasn't there. So I only sort of know what I've been obviously discussed and told. I've not really read any of the court documents because I just don't see a need to. But basically my legal team were able to forensically prove who caused my face to have a footprint mark on it. So that was able to be done. We were able to basically show, like, to cast doubt on the witness, on the witness statements, the statements that were given in court. So we were able to cast the doubt on that. So the judge accepted our argument for that. But I think overall, we were able to basically show and prove in the court of law that a lot more did happen than what was previously told in court, which obviously was a positive. A little bit more of my story got to come out. We've still got like a long way to go. But yeah, I am really hopeful and positive that once we go to the Supreme Court, like, my full story will be able to come out and everyone will be able to see the situation for exactly what it is. Obviously, it's difficult because there's some things I can't talk about. But yeah, the appeal last March was definitely positive and the judges definitely accepted a lot of, or most of, what my team had to present on the day.
Well, we wish you the very best of luck in the Supreme Court. We'll definitely be watching and covering what you're doing. How did it feel when you saw your case covered in The View?
Oh my God, it was crazy, actually. Because at this point, I'd moved to open prison and there was like, she was like a mental health sort of, I wouldn't even say a counsellor, but she was just there for like advice, just have a sit down and talk to you. And so I used to go and see her sometimes. And basically, she was like, oh, I've seen you in a magazine. And I was like, what? Like, really, really confused. So yeah, I ended up just going to find it in the library like a couple of days later. And yeah, I couldn't believe it when I saw it. And yeah, it made me feel really happy, actually. I was really, really overwhelmed because, yeah, I mean, obviously, I've received letters and, you know, I know that there was support out there, but it was really crazy, actually, like having the physical magazine. Like, I still have it. Like, I bought it home with me. I actually just took it out of the library. I was like, I don't even care. This is mine.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's so good. We do send we were sending quite a lot of them into the prison libraries, but unfortunately, we've had to go digital because of the cost of paper and stuff, but hopefully we're going to start doing paper ones at least once a year. But that just makes me, it just makes everything that we go through so worthwhile when I hear your reaction, because that's what The View's about. And your mum did actually get in touch and tell us that you were so pleased. And, you know, we will continue to support and we will continue to do whatever we can do to help to amplify your situation. Because as you say, it's, your case is really important and it highlights the injustices that brown and black women go through on a magnificent scale in England. So, you know, we're here, whatever we can do for you. And how can we do? What can we do to help and to amplify? I'm going to ask you to write something for our upcoming edition, which is the summer edition, which I'm hopeful will go into the prisons again because it'll be a print edition. But how can we support and what can we do to amplify? And what can what can people do to amplify your campaign and your situation?
I get really overwhelmed when people say about amplifying the campaign for me and stuff like that, because there's just actually just so much out there. Like, so I'm not sort of narcissistic to think that, you know, it's just me who's going through this. So I'll just talk about all the wider campaigns, like especially in Wales in 2020, there was like, so there were four, including myself, quite high profile cases of deaths in police custody and people being treated disgustingly by the justice system and not having justice for their deaths caused by other people. I'm really fortunate I'm still here, and I thank God every day, but especially people in Wales, like, we need to still be, like, they need to still be talking about all the different these four injustices. You know, obviously I've come out now and I can see, like, this, the Black Lives Matter movement, how everyone was so amped up for it. Like, it seems like it's completely died down to where it was before I went into prison. People just need to remember, like, this is not a fad. It's not, you know, just for the moment. Like, this is happening every single day. Every single day, Black lives are being lost. Every single day, Black people are being treated disgustingly by the police, by schools, by every corner and inch of society. Like, people need to keep on spreading this. They need to keep on petitioning. They need to keep on making noise about all the injustices that go on, whether it be with the justice system or another system. And I think that is the only way. Like, we literally need, like, a mass movement. People need to see that we're not taking this anymore. Because, yeah, it's just ridiculous.
No, absolutely. And I really admire and I just love your passion and how the horribleness of what was done to you, the violence, the physical violence and the mental violence done to you hasn't changed you and hasn't affected you. I think that's just something, you know, you must hold on to. I'm so proud of how you've come through this. And, you know, you have the love and the respect and the admiration of so many people who've just watched your case in disbelief and thought, how did the Court of Appeal not let this go through? So, you know, the best of luck with your appeal in the Supreme Court. I'm hopeful, but, you know, let's see. If you could change one thing in the justice system today for women, what would that be?
Being sent to prison for the crimes of men. That's what I'd say. For the justice system right now, if it was for anything, yeah, women being sent to prison for the crimes of men.
And for courts to look at that properly and look at what's behind a crime. Can I just ask you something, Sianda? Did you have a chance for the judge to, like, in your trial, did the judge ask for a psychologist report where your story could be told, you know, so that the judge knew more than, here is a violent Black woman standing in front of me, oh my goodness, she's violent and she's Black and I've got to send her to prison, you know, which is their kind of default thinking. What did the judge actually have to make an informed decision? Did he have any kind of background information on you? Did they ask for any reports?
Yeah, the whole trial lasted a week. And 3 days of it was the prosecution's case, and then the whole day was my case. He had all the information that he needed to have. You know, I didn't stop talking on the stand. I said everything that I needed to say. I showed them everything that I could physically show them. I explained everything that I could physically explain. The judge or anyone in that room didn't need any more information to make the right decision. But at the end of the day, my life, I mean, anyone's life who isn't white is really irrelevant to them. He said to me, he asked for me to have a pre-sentence report. And I remember he said to me in my sentencing, I can see from your pre-sentence report that you have been through so much and you have overcome so much, and there's no reason why you can't overcome this.
I find that absolutely stunning for a judge to say. I find it stunning.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like, you've been abused, so let me abuse you some more because you'll be fine. Do you know, you'll be grand, you'll be fine. That's just appalling.
Yeah. So in one, because I'm, the way my mind works, very analytical with my mind. In one side, I feel like everyone with half a brain in that courtroom knew. They all knew, but you know, they're not going to try and help. They're not going to go out of their way to help me. And yeah, I do think that he did try in his own way, but at the end of the day, the only way to really try was just to do the right thing and say, this is ridiculous. This needs to stop. This makes no sense, you know? When the policeman said in the dock, we did not investigate Siander's allegation, he should have stopped it straight away, and he didn't, because my life is not as important as the life of anyone who is a lot, you know, lighter skin tone than me, who's white. So that's it.
Your life is extremely important, Siander, and there are multitudes of people that care about you that are watching your case, and that, you know, we will do everything we can. Everyone who's behind you will do everything we can to make them see that our lives matter as much as theirs, if not more than theirs. We come from such incredibly deep, rich, ancient cultures, and they think they can just throw our lives away as if they mean nothing. Well, the days for that are ending. I think we're kind of in the end days of this sort of white supremacist system, which is our justice system. We're here to stay in touch. You know, whatever we can do, we're here for you. So you have our resources and our platform whenever you want to use it. So please just, you know, feel free. I'm really glad that The View gave you some hope and courage. And in that same way, you're kind of renewing it, and you're going to give so much hope and courage to women who are listening today who feel overwhelmed by the justice system, because women like you, you get through it.
Yeah.
And you'll win it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I hope so. I'm putting all the vibes out there, but you know, if I can even help this one person, it's worth it, isn't it? So you know, the whole thing's bigger than me. So just got to keep.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Thanks a lot for coming on our Rebel Justice podcast. And we really look forward to having you on again really soon.
No, it's okay. And thank you so much for having me.
And this concludes our episode for today. Siander, we are very sorry for what has been done to you by this justice system that is failing so many women, and in particular, minoritized women. We learned so much from your frank openness and the way you described what has happened to you. We'll follow this case to the Supreme Court and report back when there are new developments. We are proud to have been able to do what little we can to support your case, and we pray that justice will be done and those who have harmed you will face you in court, in the dock. Thank you for listening to the Rebel Justice Podcast. Make sure to listen to previous episodes for more on how the justice system is working exactly as it is designed to harm women and oppress minorities. If you'd like to know more about The View and you want to join our community, please subscribe using the link on our website and donate using the link below. Thank you.